Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Dan Jacobs.
All right, let's get this started right away. We've been talking about it all morning. The lovely and talented, the great Darren D-Mac McKee joins the program. Darren, how are you?
Dan, hello.
It's a pleasure having you on the program. It's a true honor. How are you?
The honor is all mine, especially because the citizens of Otis have spoken.
That's right. Thank you for that. What are you doing? You're not on the airwaves. What are you, on vacation? What are you doing?
I am attending a wedding of my wife's cousin in Amish country, Pennsylvania. I'm basically going to a wedding at Shroot Farms, and that will be happening later today. So,
all right. Well,
I'm celebrating fall in Amishville.
All right. Well, say hi to Roy Munson for me if you see him.
I will. I will pass my regards.
All right. So. Just get right to it. A lot happened this week with John Elway. He's basically revealed the station's running a promo that you said they've basically given up on Drew Locke. James Marilat disagrees. He thinks they're just being patient. But it seems to me, it's obvious to me, that John Elway is still clinging to this Band-Aid mediocrity approach. Is it now more than ever more clear that it's time that somebody has to save John Elway from himself?
Well, you know, when John was up announcing VJ had been fired in January, the most remarkable part of that was John was getting to do that. And when you think about the changes that have been made and what had happened, very few executives get to make those kind of mistakes and continue on. But there was a concept that, okay, hey, it is what it is. We all agree, you know, VJ was the wrong hire. Made, you know, solely by John Elway with influence from Gary Kubiak and support from Matt Russell, but still John has to make that call. And it was a terrible decision on a remarkable amount of levels. But that being said, it's complicated because it wasn't just that it was a terrible hire, which it was, but also Vance Joseph did not have what he needed, nor did he have the autonomy or authority to really deliver whatever kind of concept he may have had, which what that is not very clear. So it was a combination of all sorts of bad things and bad decisions that have followed. But yet still, you know, John's been given the power to sort of right the ship. And it was a last-ditch effort. It was a situation where, okay, well, that was wrong and this was wrong, but we'll do this thing right and that thing right. And those things have not worked out. The selection of Drew Locke, it sort of defines just, you know, the place that they took him and why they took him defines how they were lacking clarity in whatever direction they wanted to go in the first place. Because if you wanted to select Drew Locke in the first round at 10 overall, there's a clear picture of what's about to happen. And in many ways, having a veteran quarterback like Joe Flacco, mentor, a first-round pick quarterback, it's a very effective, tried-and-true method that exists in the NFL. There's example after example. But the fact of the matter is, once you select a quarterback past the first round, and the second and third round, it gets confusing, because what exactly are your intentions with that selection? And then when they restructured Joe Flacco's deal, although it's not crippling, it's not like the worst thing in the world, again, philosophically, it's confusing. Who exactly are you going to go with? And the direction that it was going to be Joe Flacco was pretty clear then, and got confusing when Drew Locke was taken in the second round, because if you wanted a backup or a roll-the-dice sort of developmental guy, you could have taken Jarrett Stidham in the fourth round or gone on from there, and they simply didn't. So instead of giving Joe Flacco everything that he would need, they only gave him some of the things that he needs. And the result has been, well, you see what the result is. And it was all hinging on the fact that Joe Flacco would work out in the first place. We know Joe Flacco is not going to work out. We know Joe Flacco is more or less who he has become, not what he once was. And I don't blame Joe Flacco. Who's going to turn down that kind of cash? That's for sure. But the problem is it has set the Broncos back. And now the commitment to Drew Lock is, you know, scattered to say the least. He is healthy enough to come back and practice. So it's still this sort of concept that the Broncos are still competitive. Well, we'll see what happens against the Colts, who are probably the maybe second, third, fourth best team in the AFC. Well, I mean, we'll see how the results go tomorrow. In the Broncos' minds, I still think they think there's an issue. And we thought they were on the verge of a rebuild, but we were told this week, well, that's not the case, because the reason we got rid of Emmanuel Sanders wasn't to start a rebuilding process. The reason they got rid of Emmanuel Sanders is he was a pain in their butt, and he wanted to go, and they wanted him gone. And if they were really more serious, you would have seen Chris Harris traded this week as well. Instead, you didn't see him traded. He wasn't chopped around out there. And we'll see what happens after this game. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Chris Harris was never dealt. And if they win, talk about fool's gold. If they win and beat the Colts, holy cow. I mean, we are maybe seeing some sort of season turnaround where they could finish 7-9 or even magically 8-8. But then where are you? You certainly aren't going to draft a quarterback in the first round at that point. And you'll have a competition between Joe Flacco and Drew Lock during training camp.
Which Drew Lock will
Flacco
never win.
Win that competition.
Right? Drew Lock's never going to win that, right?
Drew Lock will never win that competition. It's impossible for a quarterback to win that type of competition. We knew Paxton Lynch would never win the competition against Trevor Siemian. And what they should have done was cleared the decks. And you drafted Paxton Lynch. You committed to him. So commit to him. I mean, it was a terrible decision. Because anybody who spends, you know, 2 minutes with Paxton Lynch realizes that this guy doesn't have the capabilities of leadership to lead an organization. I don't know how you miss that, but it was missed. And it's been proven out as, where is he even a backup? Pittsburgh? Somewhere? I have no idea. He's somewhere where he's not playing. So that's the situation they're in, Dan. And so whenever you think about a player, if you don't factor in opportunity given to a player, there's no point in taking the player.
Right.
And you if you look at the NFL, it's littered with starters and contributors in rounds 1, 2, and 3. And even Vic Fangio this week said he was praising Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, stating about how critical the draft was. And he's right. So maybe Rich Gangarello doesn't deserve to be offense coordinator. He certainly didn't have much experience going into this. And maybe Vic Fangio, you know, is, you know, a little young when it comes to head coaching, but boy, oh boy, it is so disruptive to not commit to anything. And that has been the biggest problem the Broncos have had.
Well, so we've been talking about this earlier in the show. Now, I agreed with you in that the worst thing that could happen to the Broncos would be a victory over the Colts, because it would be fool's gold. And even, like you said, in a best case scenario, well, then they middle around and they're almost mediocre. Is it, if you're a Broncos fan, should you be rooting for, if you truly care about this organization, should you be rooting for loss week after week so that John Elway will then have no other choice than to address a rebuild and address the future?
No, you should not. Here's why. As a Broncos fan, you should root for them to win, because at the end of the day, any professional sports team is there for the fans' entertainment. And rooting for your team to lose just sucks. Now, that doesn't make a lot of logical sense, but this isn't on the fans, okay? This is on the owners of the team, the managers of the team, to get right. This is not on the fans. The fans should root for their team to win. They should go into every Sunday knowing that, hey, any given Sunday my team can win. Fans shouldn't have to worry about all this other stuff. So I'm definitely not going to put that on the fans. I think the fans should root for their team to win every single week, and they shouldn't have to worry about this other type of crap. The fact that we're just having this conversation is a bummer for the fans, and I don't want people to get the wrong idea that I'm rooting for the Broncos to lose. I'm not. What I'm rooting for is for the organization to make the best decisions they possibly can while still trying to win. And the best decision, there's some inevitable things, Dan, that are going on here. It is inevitable. At some point, there has to be a turnover in ownership. Inevitable. It's not even debatable. It's going to happen. And the time frame that it's going to happen, whether you think 2 or 3 years is short or long, is kind of up to whatever your perspective is. If we're thinking about this organization for the next 50 years, 2 years is a drop in the bucket. It's nothing. If you're thinking about, can the Broncos get back to the playoffs next year? Well, that seems like a long period of time. It's about perspective. John Elway has 2 years left on his deal. Joe Ellis has 2 years left on his deal. There is a big question about how these guys want to go out. Joe Ellis inevitably will go out no matter what, because as a new owner comes in at some point, that will be with Joe Ellis passing the torch. Elway, I don't know. That's sort of a different conversation. If a new owner wanted to retain John Elway to have a role in the organization, it wouldn't be unusual for that to happen. I think it's unlikely, but it wouldn't be unusual. And then you have to think of motivations of Joe Ellis. I would assume Joe Ellis would be happy to say, I did the best I could for this organization for a long time, which is true. You know, him managing the Broncos, yeah, we're in this period right now, but we're also in a period where they won a Super Bowl and we're going to the playoffs year after year. I think Joe can hang his hat on that and be satisfied that, you know, he really did a overall fantastic job with the Broncos. For Elway, I think it's a little bit more complicated, because going out like this is difficult. It's not ideal. And he is now facing criticism like he's never faced before. So how desperate will he be to right the ship? Can't tell, Dan. And that's where somebody probably needs to step in and say, hey, you know, enough's enough. But guess what? That's not up to the fans. That's not the fans' decision, nor should it be the fans' responsibility. And to root for the team to lose would make it as if it was their responsibility.
Well, D-Mac, it's not their responsibility, but knowing what we know about how John Elway operates, and part of it is exactly what you just said, which is he's going to, because he hates the idea that he looks like a loser, he will do everything he can to be mediocre. What we know for a fact is that D-Mac, I can't, and tell me if you can, I can't see any other way that anything is going to change the way John Elway operates, unless this team is horrifically bad and they lose a ton of games and he has no other options to say, hey, we're going to move on. We're going to actually address the quarterback situation for the future. And we're going to actually say, okay, we have some nice pieces here, but we really need to focus on rebuilding this. How's that going to happen? It's not on the fans, but how's that going to happen if they win
there's
7 games?
One way.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's one way. There may be two ways, but the biggest Hail Mary, the biggest thing in the short amount of time is to throw as much money as humanly possible at Tom Brady and bring him in for 2 years.
Oh, that's never
I'm not even
happen.
Joking about
never
it.
Never going to happen.
Well, okay, that's fine. You can tell me it's not going to happen, but that's how it would happen. I'm not advocating for this, by the way. But anybody, in my opinion, who tells you Tom Brady doesn't care about money, you know, I don't think Tom Brady's, you know, worried about a grocery bill. But I think it's logical that you want to be treated like the best of all time if you are the best of all time, and that's what money proves. Do I think it's going to happen, or am I advocating it for it to happen? No, Dan, of course not, because nobody was banging the drum stronger than I was to move up and get the quarterback you wanted a couple of years ago, and that would have been Sam Darnold. And you could have done the deal, and I'm sticking by the Sam Darnold, despite the fact he had such a horrific game the other night, but that was a much more reasonable plan. That would have made sense. But they passed on it. And they did not even recognize that offensive line is more important than pass rush if you don't have a good offensive line or quarterback, and they passed on Quentin Nelson as well. And again, they passed on it in this latest draft when they could have just got Devin Bush, slam dunk player, or they could have got Bradbury, a starting center there for the Vikings, and they passed on that too for a below mediocre tight end right now in Noah Fant. So, Dan, what am I supposed to say? When you ask me if there's a way, there is a way. Will it happen? Probably not. But there is a way, and that's exactly what it is, and that's to throw a ton of money and get Tom Brady for 2 years.
All right, so the last one for you, circling back, because we've been talking about Drew Lock. It appears to me, with what John Elway said this week, best case scenario, we might see him in a couple of token games at the end of the year, but it's likely he might not come off IR at all, right?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, we'll see. You know, the really quick, I'm sorry, I'm blabbering on here. The thing with Drew Lock that is confounding is not only it's not about whether he's going to start or not. They don't think he's as good of a backup as Brandon Allen right now, because in their minds, they're still competing here. So he's not a better option than Brandon Allen. I hope people understand that. And, you know, it's not about him playing. It's about him practicing, Dan, because he's not allowed to practice with the team. And I've been told by really good sources that he is easily healthy enough to be practicing. So if they were to bring him back, they would have to make a decision on Brandon Allen. So what they're telling you isn't, you know, hey, Drew Lock's ready to go. It's like, he's not better than Brandon Allen as a backup.
Well, that's
it's
what I'm going to ask you.
Insane.
Well, let me interrupt. Because you have sources, and you've kind of been talking about this theme throughout this entire interview. It is confusing. I mean, what do they think of? I mean, why did they draft him, and what do they think of him? Like, what are they planning for Drew Lock? Just a lifetime project?
Nobody knows, because nobody on the coaching staff in a million years would have ever taken Drew Lock in the second round when they could have had Eric McCoy, for example, in the second round as a center. Nobody on the Vic Fangio, at least. Do you really think Vic Fangio wanted Noah Fant over Devin Bush? I mean, insano world.
Right.
So the concept was trade back and get a weapon for Joe Flacco as a tight end, a position the Broncos have struggled, which really was a roll-your-eyes moment. And the concept was to have two second-round picks. They did not anticipate that Drew Lock would fall that far, and then they made an emotional play. It was smart to get two second-round picks, because that's exactly how you build an offensive line. And the calculation and drafting of Dalton Risner was spectacular, because a lot of people had him in the first round, and that was great. And you're sitting right there. Okay, it's a little dubious that they moved back for Noah Fant, for sure. Okay, but whatever. You just got Dalton Risner, and you have pick number 52. If you want to do anything, move up a little bit and get your next offensive lineman. And you know what? It has happened before. There was Zane Beatles and J.D. Walton, Dan, in the same round. And those two played together quite effectively for a good chunk of time, more or less until J.D. Walton got hurt. So it's not like it couldn't happen. It can happen. And look what happens when offensive linemen can develop together. I mean, it can be absolutely fantastic. It was sitting right there for them. And for whatever wacky reason, probably emotional and personal, and hey, look at this. We're smarter than everybody. Look at everybody in the NFL has passed on Drew Lock, and there's our guy in the second round. It was arrogant. And there is no plan. And right now, there is no plan. So I don't know what's going to happen to Drew Lock, other than the fact that I feel bad, a little bit bad, for Drew Lock himself, because they drafted this guy with really no plan. And if you think Drew Lock is going to look – Drew Lock, Dan, is going to need to suffer through 2, maybe 3 years of development playing to even have a chance. Only 18% of second-round quarterbacks, 18%, Dan, through history, have worked out. 18%. So if you want to point out quarterbacks that have worked out, I'll say, sure, there's 18%. You can have all sorts of Andy Dalton, Colin Kaepernick of the world. That's part of the 18%. But 72% don't work out. And, Dan, let me tell you, only about 36-38% of first-round quarterbacks work out as well. It's hard. It's really, really difficult. And you have to have opportunity to equal success. And, Dan, if you don't have opportunity, forget it. It's toast.
All right, so this is the last one I have for you then, because I've had people reaching out on Twitter and things like that. This and we know it's all in good fun, but this khaki pants conversation with And actually, my Twitter, there's a weird thing on my phone now that every time I pull up Twitter, this text between you and Mike Evans pops up every single time I open Twitter now until I refresh. Are you guys going to be able to at least bury the hatchet on this thing, or is this just something that we're just going to, you know, it's going to be going on, you're going to be going at each other all the time for the rest of eternity?
Well, I can see that it might annoy people, but if anybody is should be upset or angry or, you know, crazy about things, it should be people towards Mike Evans on this. And listen, Mike and I are friends. We don't hate each other or anything like that. We're buddies for sure. And I respect Mike, and I think he does a fantastic job. And I love listening to him and Mark. If I didn't love listening, I wouldn't, you know, listen, that sort of thing. So I think these two they do a great job. But I'm boring, Dan, on this. My philosophy is based very boring. It's nerdy. It's based on historical success and analytics that I've studied simply by going to profootballreference.com and doing a very base sort of research on success ratios of where quarterbacks are taken. But the one thing that Mike never, ever, ever discusses is how opportunity works into the rate of success. And we all know first-round quarterbacks, and the higher you go, the better, are given the most opportunity. And you're seeing it for yourself right now. And I had to laugh to myself when Mike was aghast that they're taking so long on Drew Lock. But of course they are, because he's not as high of a priority as he would be if he was drafted in the top 10. And you can grind your teeth and yell and scream about how terrible that is, but that is just the way it's been, Dan, forever. Go look at it. The one common thread between quarterbacks who have success, who are drafted in the second and third rounds, is once they are given an opportunity, Dan, they just stay there. That's it. Teams are fully committed to them. I'll give you a great example very quickly, and that's with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick in the year that Alex Smith got hurt. Colin Kaepernick came in. He was a second-round pick, him and Andy Dalton, second-rounders who were very successful. And even though Alex Smith got healthy, they stuck with Colin Kaepernick, and it created a huge issue. And it eventually sent Alex Smith out of there. Well, there were other great factors. San Francisco had a great defense, and they had a great team. But they were committed to Colin Kaepernick until everything fell apart with the political stuff. That's the way it works. So when you see the Broncos aren't even willing to have Drew Lock practice, seriously, what are we supposed to think about that?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's maddening. Hey, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy and taking time out while you're on vacation and you're out at the wedding. We appreciate it very much.
I'm watching a horse and buggy go by right now.
You know what's funny? I went into an Amish furniture store. I was in Kansas City a couple months ago, and it was beautiful furniture. But then I got to these chairs, and they were made out of like Trex, like manufactured material. And I said, you know, this is like plastic. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, is there a lot of, you know, are the Amish real big in molding plastics? And they're like, well,
I wish
no,
you would keep your Amish hate to yourself. I love everything Amish.
No, it was beautiful. The furniture was beautiful. I just thought it was a little bit odd. I was like, I thought they were out there churning the butter and you know, chopping down the trees and you know, all that stuff. But it was very expensive, and it was very beautiful. But I hope you enjoy your time out there in Amish country. And thanks for taking
the time. Thank you, Dan. I will.
All right. Thanks.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Darren D-Mac McKee joining the program. He's absolutely right in that you got to play quarterbacks. Of course, Drew Lock is never going to overtake Joe Flacco if you don't play him. Because one has experience playing and has played previously at a high level in the league, and he's going to be more experienced in practice every single time. You got to play him. That's just what it comes down to. Now, one thing I did disagree with D-Mac on is, if you're a fan, it's not as like it's the fan's responsibility to root for losses. But what I am saying is that's the only way that anybody, that John Elway or Joe Ellis, that's the only way possible that you're going to see the changes that need to happen with this organization is if the Broncos lose. Because if they get a win here or there, John Elway is going to be just as delusional about, we're just, you know, we're almost there. And, if we hadn't lost the Bears game or if we hadn't lost this, man, if you're a fan, you got to be rooting for losses because it is fool's gold. I don't think they're going to win this weekend, but nothing could be worse for the organization than them winning this weekend. We also have some text out here talking about whether you should either not show up to the game or what you should do if you do show up to the game. We'll address those texts next. We have a couple of phone calls coming in as well. It's the Dan Jacobs Show here on The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.